Contest reminder, folks, make sure when you give a good rating and review to Growcast that you take a screenshot of it and you email it to contact@growcastpodcast.com, because three lucky reviewers are going to receive 2 months free of the upcoming Growcast membership program. You'll learn more about that during today's ad break. Make sure to give us a good rating and review and email it to contact@growcastpodcast.com. Subject rating. Those of you who have sent in your snapshots, you're entered. Good luck, and thank you all for listening. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Please tell a friend about the show before we get started here. Gotta say, give us a rating and review, all that good stuff. Subscribe to the podcast if you're not doing that already. Excited to speak with our guest today, Chris Trump from Natural Farming Company. Going to talk about soil, going to talk about reshaping big ag, some really cool stuff. How you doing, Chris?
Doing great, Jordan. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. Really excited to talk to you. Talk to me about Natural Farming Company, what your mission is, and how it all got started.
Yeah. Natural Farming Company, we have gotten going kind of online, and it was born out of a desire I have, my family has, to kind of travel and be involved in some third world places. So started going to Cambodia and Myanmar, and there's real need. We have real need in the U.S., but kind of for my kids and us, we'd like to be involved some in the just the reality of agriculture internationally in some places where it makes a pretty big difference. And so we're like, oh, okay, well, that costs money and can't do it for free. And people want, you know, education here in the U.S. And so we have a little bit more money here. So we're sharing and creating content that's valuable and impactful for farmers and their profitability, so that ultimately we can kind of give away knowledge to people that will never be able to afford any kind of education. And that's slowly happening. So it's fun.
What do we lack here in the States when it comes to our knowledge of farming and how we're treating the soil and that sort of thing?
You know, that's kind of like a history lesson. We didn't lack three generations ago. We actually had some really cool practices that were passed down from, you know, immigrants and Indians alike. We had some pretty cool ways to tend to the life of the soil and some pretty productive farms. But then we got way smarter than 100 generations of farmers, and we had some big fertilizer companies left over from the war, and we started torching our soil with the hope of increasing yields. But we found now, a few generations into it, that yields diminish. We're hurting something that before we didn't realize was there, which is a microbial diversity in life that is actually responsible for production and mining all the wonderful nutrients that are in soil.
So this is a common story that we've heard talking to soil scientists on the show. What can we do to resolve some of this? Like, so that's how we got here. What's the path forward to repairing, you know, what the damage that was done and reshaping minds?
Yeah, I think it starts with a little bit of humility, that maybe even though we've come, you know, farther than we were, you know, a generation ago with, you know, chemical fertilizer and our new kind of discoveries of things to kill weeds. I think we need to say, even now that we're understanding microbial life and its diversity, I think we now need to say that there is more to learn. It's a little bit bigger than us. So I think just taking note of how nature does things is something I'm a huge proponent of, being able to learn from a system that works. You know, nature's not broken. go into wild lands and where people aren't messing with it, and the fruit trees are fertile and abundant, and you know, we have all these kind of systems for checking how much we're taking off and putting on. But I think I truly believe that it's actually a net positive system with rain and sun. We're actually able to increase, even on the commercial scale, the fertility of our land.
Why was there so much starvation prior? Like what, like you said, when we started torching our soil, did that provide a temporary yield increase? Like what, why did we stay down this road? Why did we go so hard down this road? I know a lot had to, like you said, had to do with surplus coming out of two major world wars. But I'm just wondering, like, why, you know what I mean? Like, what was the positive benefit to sticking to our guns?
Yeah, we have a lot of really honest people that it's not like there's this big coalition of evil farmers trying to torch land. Like,
right.
Farmers are, they're some of the most genuine, you know, hardworking. It's really an incredible breed.
And they're trying to solve a problem with the tools they have available, right? And so it's like you choose the best course of act. I'm glad you recognize that, because a lot of people do think that everything that we're handed now today is orchestrated, but these are trends and forces that have been building for decades, having to do with like geopolitical, you know, wars being fought and all this crazy stuff. But sorry, continue.
No, we got to be careful. And even for me, like I'm not anti- any of our current farming methods, as far as the stance I take, I don't think there's actually a way forward in being anti. If we were to say an anti movement were able to stop all chemical fertilizer production and, you know, glyphosate and GMO, you know, every catchphrase and thing that people are against, if it all succeeded tomorrow, we'd starve.
Right.
The world would starve. I mean, there's a huge machine in motion, and the solution isn't to be anti.
It's not to blow up the machine. Yeah.
No. It's to provide another answer. Mm-hmm. It's to provide, and not one. The pitch I've heard for organic growing up in a, you know, for-profit farm, is, you know, slowly bleed money until you go out of business for our ideals. And that's a bad sale to a farmer who's supporting employees and the next generation.
Right.
So no, we need something profitable that also tends to the land. And for me, that's the mission in the US is profitability for farmers. Mm. What we're doing on our farm, we have a 700-acre organic macadamia nut farm on Big Island of Hawaii.
Nice. And,
we're in the last 3 years, we've been more profitable than we've been in the 30 years prior. And it's largely attributed to decreasing our fertilizer costs and increasing yields.
Wow, nice.
Due to tending the microbial life of the soil.
Has that tending to the soil and optimizing the soil compounded over the years? Is that why you're now seeing such good results? Does it take that long sometimes?
No, we are actually just kind of new in using natural farming as our farming practice.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant 30 years into. Okay, I understand. So it was a recent switch.
Yeah, we were a split operation for the last 12 years.
Oh,
and prior to that, it was all conventional. For the last 12 years, we did organic and conventional, kind of half-half. And we lost money on the organic generally. I mean, or break even, it was increased total, but it just wasn't very profitable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then about 7 years ago, actually, 2011, we got into full swing of actually doing it on our farm. We were learning about natural farming before that. So about 12 years ago. Sorry. 2011, about 8 years ago.
Uh-huh.
We jumped into really trying it on our farm with some skepticism. We had heard of a system for tending the microbial life of the soil, but we kind of wanted to, if it works, it works. Not, we're going to try it because we believe it, you know, just because somebody told us it works. Farmers are skeptical people.
Well, yeah, sometimes, you don't want to take a risk. You don't want to just go all in on this idea. Yeah. And you also don't want to waste a bunch of time doing a split test even.
Exactly. Yeah, we don't have, nobody's paying us to do research. So, yeah, we did a 14-tree trial and a 5-acre trial and then moved to 50 acres and then 120. We ran at 120 for about 4 years. And looking at that and what changed on that kind of trial plot, we switched our whole operation about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really cool.
All right, everybody, before we jump back in with Chris Trump, I wanted to update you guys on some of the perks of this GrowCast membership program that we're putting out now. As you know, you'll get extra episodes of GrowCast. You'll get inside info with Wolfman. You'll get a monthly Ask Me Anything. You'll get giveaways and prizes and all sorts of fun stuff. Lots of extra GrowCast content, which you guys love. But maybe most importantly is the web of discounts that we have with our partnered vendors. These are all amazing grow products, and you're going to get some steep, steep discounts if you join this program. 25% for a lot of these vendors, guys. And these products are all amazing. So let me just run down a couple to give you guys an idea of what we're doing. You know, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, 25% discount is going to be amazing. That's, you guys are going to love that. You know, Atlas Plant Trainer, Coconut Rooted Life, all part of the membership program. What you may not know, Gorilla Grow Tent, great company. They make amazing grow tents. We have Harvest Mutual Seed Bank. They're going to be giving away free seeds, free shipping, 10% off seeds. Danny Danko is going to be giving away his book to our members. Vivid Grow LED lights, amazing, amazing LEDs. Fish Shit Farms, maybe the most exciting product in my opinion is the organic soil conditioner, Fish Shit. Greencraft Distribution makes a lot of different grow room products. Newt Tools, it's nutrient measuring tools, really cool. Oh, this one's nice. Humble Garden HP lenses. These are lenses you put on your smartphone so you can take pictures of your buds under HPS lights, and it removes the filter so you can photograph your buds during flowering. Lots of cool stuff. We're just getting started. So excited to keep you guys up to date on this. Let's get back to the show. Before we kind of steer towards cannabis, I wanted to follow up on what you were saying. Reshaping the world's view of farming here and abroad. And that's why my first question was, what are we missing here? My follow-up question was, what are we missing abroad? When you go out to Cambodia, I'm sure that they don't have the same problems with lack of biodiversity, but I'm also sure they probably face problems of their own. What do you see abroad? Not just Cambodia specifically, but talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, I guess to kind of finish up with here, showing what we found was that natural farming was scalable and commercially viable for our farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have those resources when we started. The biggest farm I saw in travels and education in natural farming going to Korea was a 23-acre persimmon orchard.
Nice.
And, they did 3 or 4 years of natural farming, kind of putting things on. And then I saw it 14 years after they started natural farming. And for the last 11 years, they had done no fertilizing other than mulch.
Wow.
And tending to bugs. And so, yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, kind of thing like if, you know, a Japanese farmer had one tree, you know, it looked like he was tending his baby, but it was 23 acres worth of that. It was incredible.
Wow.
But they were, I mean, things were being done in wheelbarrows, and I was thinking of trying to scale up a wheelbarrow kind of amounts, and it would have taken me a lifetime. So there's scalability. It's actually something I'm going to show, just a tour of our farm, how we're doing that. I'm going to release that video in the next month or so, because it's something people have been asked for. What does it look like on your farm? And So what I want to do, and I've started doing, is sharing with some commercial farmers so that they're profitable, because you don't have to pitch it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a big sales pitch if somebody's profitable and farming organically. So if that starts happening, then you don't have to go to your neighbor and say, hey, man, you should try this, you know, natural farming. Your neighbor comes over and you're like, and they're like, hey, you're making more money than me.
Exactly.
And looks like you have more time and nobody's wearing hazmat suits. What are you doing? They start asking. And that's what we encountered when we first started on our farm. Everybody in our industry was kind of like, you're crazy. You can't do it like that. And now, you know, they come over and they say, wow, your trees look better than any I've ever seen. And what are you guys doing? Will you be on our international research committee and speak in China this year? You know,
wow.
It's profitability and success kind of speaks for you.
That's what gets stuff done in this country, for better and for worse, to be honest. And the positive side is, the benefit of something like that is, it can spread faster than any other, you know, form of dispersion. You know what I mean? Like, if it makes money and people catch on, that is the fastest way. That's faster than legislation. That's faster than, you know, changing people's minds on a moral level. That is a million times faster than anything, if you can make it profitable in this country. So there are upsides, obvious downsides as well. But I like what you're saying. Focus on the profitability part, the scalability part. That's how to move. That's where the rubber meets the road. That's how to actually get stuff done. Worry about the moral incentives as kind of a bonus almost. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If we think that large scale or complete systemic change is going to come through, you know, a
desire to do good.
Yeah. Yeah. A moving t-shirt in our country. It's just not true. We can't be that way. And I am all for, and there's tons. I mean, I have one of my students, manages three, county golf courses in the county of San Francisco area. And, all the golf courses butt up against the ocean. Their runoff runs into the sea. He's doing it completely with Korean natural farming, creating a liquid IMO. And so he's literally increasing the health of the bay by removing all chemicals, but he's also, I mean, his pitch to his boss is they're paying less and their grass looks better.
Wow. If you can't beat them, join them. I don't want to seem cynical when I'm saying all this stuff, like good luck changing people's minds. Like, I think there's a point for all that stuff, but it's hard to argue with what you just said, which is why not provide value and solve the problem. But you know why not? The reason why not is because that's hard, man. It's because your friend is smart and there's not a lot of, he's smarter than me and that's why he's doing what he's doing. And there's not a lot of smart people. So I think it's easier to just be like, they should ban golf. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Which, by the way, I'm also not a fan of that sport, but it's easy to say ban golf, I don't like it. But what you're saying is, this guy's like, no, I have a better idea. Let's provide value for everyone and save money in the process. It's cool, man. It's really cool stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the mission or the drum to beat in the U.S. Internationally, however, like you asked, it's quite different. It has to be. I mean, you're talking with farmers that don't have resource, period, and so it has to be free. And so being able to walk around and say, hey, your land is good for growing too. You just need a little bit of knowledge. Our export in the U.S. for international aid and agriculture has been pretty bad. I won't go into it, but we haven't had a good track record of how we take care of other nations with our agricultural aid.
Are you talking about when it comes to quality?
So no, I'll go into that a little bit. We'll have a crisis, international crisis,
mm-hmm.
and our government will put it out for a bid, somebody to come in and be kind of the saving community. And so we provide these inputs for free with a, you know, benevolent heart, not really,
right?
For about 3 years.
Uh huh.
for about 3 years. We'll get them going. We provide education to train them how to use all our inputs, and they become productive because they've had land that's, you know, been traditionally farmed for years. And you put on chemical fertilizer, you get a bumper crop in the first few years because
right.
there's still the microbes, and the microbes mine these salts you're putting on, and you get all kinds of cool production. But then after 3 years and they're productive, we say, okay, well, you're doing great. Well, your food crisis is, you know, dying down because you're producing food. And now we'll sell it to you at a reasonable price.
All right.
Our reasonable price is able to change based on their production and profitability. And we've created a nation of agricultural slaves.
Whoa. That's crazy. I've never heard this before. And it makes perfect sense. When they're in a food crisis like that, is it usually because of some sort of like pestilence, like a disease outbreak?
Yeah, they can have a disease. They can have a flood. You know, there's just needs arise, and it's real. It does need help.
Right, but that's not the answer. As a cannabis grower, I know the answer isn't to just come and give the guy a bunch of Eagle 20, which is illegal, to get rid of his powdery mildew. It's not giving a man a fish, but it's also not teaching a man how to fish. It's like teaching a man how to fish improperly. You know what I mean?
And the problem is we haven't had another export. It's not like everybody involved in this aid has some sort of evil intent. For the big companies that have had the ability to really put feet on the ground and stuff, it's what we've made, you know, it's
right.
it's not all this terrible thing. It's like, this is how we grow food in the U.S.
Right.
We are actually sending it. And it's hard because people, you know, think, oh, it's all evil, and it's not, it's cloudy. There's a bunch of factors involved. There is
absolutely
a love for money.
It does to me, though. It seems like an effort in futility, which is the most important thing to say, all right, we need to change, not an effort in futility, but like, it's a dead end. Isn't this technique eventually going to be a dead end?
Yeah. And we're realizing that, and science is, you know, discovering that. And yet, we're in this time right now as we explore the new frontier of microbiological life and interactions in soil, where we know we're not doing the best things, but we also don't have a better way broadly known or used yet where we can keep up with our food demand.
Right.
And so that's kind of where, you know, the need in the U.S. is to show a profitable model, because then people can get on board. And internationally, to set up, you know, places of learning or to share learning. And we're doing that through YouTube, you know, and a lot mm-hmm. of people, but then they have to be able to speak English. But going over and sharing knowledge of how to take literally the weeds and the waste from your land and the leaf litter and create profitability and production out of your farm, that once you share that, if somebody catches that in the community, then that can be passed on to the next generation, and the whole community can change without them ever needing me again.
Right.
You know, or anybody for that matter. They have been given knowledge that may have been lost or just didn't get, you know, transferred all around or whatever. And so they did this in India. Actually, Chohan Yu, who started the kind of Korean iteration of natural farming, did it in India in a very economically suppressed community. He shared with them just how to grow food using the resource of the land. And they became one of the most affluent food producing communities in their state or region of India, and began being able to share with other communities when they had been the poorest and the most needy. And there's no tether or you know, string to the U.S. or anyone for that matter. They are literally empowered to teach as many people as they want and share their resource. So it's cool.
The internet just seems like a crucial part of this whole equation. And like you said, it's crazy how knowledge could just be lost. And now the ability to spread it is just unprecedented. Like you said, I don't think it's going to stop with because of a language barrier. Like, this is the kind of knowledge that can really, really go far. But that brings me into my next question and, you know, the topic of this show. Why cannabis? Why does cannabis excite you? Obviously, anytime there's like a wake, right? So the cannabis industry is like, you know, blowing through the waves like a big steamer ship. But there's also all of this wake behind it, all of this like different innovation and different, you know, opportunities for profit, all these different sectors popping up that really have nothing to do with weed or smoking weed or growing weed. But there's this huge effect. You know what I mean? Is the way that the cannabis wake touches ag, is that what excites you about this whole natural farming cannabis intersection?
You know, I'm excited. Definitely. There's incredible minds in the cannabis community. And I'm excited by the life of a farmer, truthfully. So I went, I had a student invite me to come out to Garberville, Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm.
Last year
out in the mountains, for those of you across the nation, if you're an outdoor grower in Humboldt County, you're not, you know, growing in the city, you're going south to the mountains. So where you went is like the heart of grow country, outdoor grow country.
Yeah. The Emerald Triangle, that whole, yeah, it's
precisely.
Beautiful.
Yeah, for real. It really is incredible, incredible place to, I live there around there briefly, and incredible place to live and visit. But you got to be careful going on. Those farmers mean business. Like you said, these aren't your average like city folk. These are real farmers with guns and like excavators up there, right?
Yeah. And there's been generations of a black market of, you know, cannabis. And when I went, it was just legalization had just fallen. You know, it just had happened, you know, a couple of years ago. And the impact on the minds of farmers was significant. It was, you know, they were looking at going from, I mean, these are rough numbers, but looking at going from $2,500 a pound to $500 a pound in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, the problems of fertility and productivity aren't things you can just throw money at. You know, they aren't things that, you know, whoever's got the best product to grow the best weed will get my bid. Vote.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so coming in and seeing, oh, wow, this is like, people weren't depressed. It was beautiful, wonderful, joyful people. But there was also kind of like, what are we going to do? And so I was encouraged to share hope, you know, that this, we get $1.25 per pound for our product in Hawaii.
Right.
And we grow in one of the most expensive places to grow in the world. And there is this knowledge that your land is good for production. Just tending to the microbial life. So we got, you know, and the landing room was there, and a bunch of the cannabis innovators were speaking, and we were able to just talk about, hey, you can tend to the microbial life of your soil and grow like crazy and cut your costs significantly. And that's not super popular if you're, you know, selling a product to cannabis farmers, but there's still a lot of merit to all those products, but maybe they don't carry the weight of everything you're doing.
I love that.
So, yeah, it was.
I love that attitude.
It was fun.
So maybe you like the need. You see the big need, an opportunity to fill this void, and that's what excites you to talk to these cannabis growers. Is probably, like you said, inspiring hope and providing a solution. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that and I like people. And like I said, I love the breed that is Farmer. You know, they're, it's the same, you know, the same person that goes out and looks at everything and touches the plants and is caring for, you know, I was born on a farm, and I actually can't get away from it. I've tried to spend time away, and there's something in me that's, it's a, whatever, a call or a, you know, a voice in my head that nothing else is quite as satisfying. So yeah, it's a community. It's what's really cool is the cannabis, especially the regenerative cannabis community is really like growing tighter, especially mm-hmm. with legalization and everybody being able to come together and gather and do conferences.
Yeah. There's like a couple, you know, huge names that just kind of like you're one of them. You came up on a show I did with Stephen Reisner from Growing with Fishes and Potent Ponics, his whole deal over there. Mm-hmm. You're kind of in that group, man. And it's like, there's like four or five names that are, I think you guys, that's why I hold out hope, is because of people like you. I think you guys really can accomplish a lot and change a lot of minds, you know, through the science side, through the morality side, and from talking to you, through the business side of the whole agricultural industry. You know what I mean? So I love it, and I love what you're doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, totally, man.
And you know, like, to finish off at what you were saying, I think that just cannabis farmers in particular are such a fun breed and a grateful breed, and like people in Northern California are just so nice. So, like you said, everyone's tight knit, but they're also welcoming, right? Have you found that to be the case? They'll welcome you in.
Totally, the hospitality, and you know, I've found cooler, sweeter people in that community than just about anywhere on earth. So totally. I will say Asian cultures like Cambodia and Myanmar are pretty warm as well. I appreciate that. You know, when I talk to really smart, you know, experts in the scientific community, and they don't got any time to learn or, you know, will poo-poo ideas.
Mm.
I just kind of smile, and you know, we have a, you know, I'm born and raised in the country, and country people are crazy smart. But when somebody comes in and they know everything and they start throwing, you know, prideful statements around,
mm-hmm.
country people would just kind of dumb up and be like, hey, yeah,
that's so true,
our partner, you know, and they'll just let people run their mouth and be as smart as they want to do, but they won't do business.
That's the best way to be. That's what Buddha said to walk away, and that's what country people do, is they just try to walk away.
That's my style, man. When somebody's like, oh, I know everything there is about, you know, fungus, and you can't cure Phytophthora with, you know, beneficial fungi. It just doesn't work. I say, oh, shucks, man, I wish I knew as much as you do, and, you know, and, at the same time, you know, we're in an era of innovation. And, I mean, even Steve's a great example. Steve Reisner, you know, Growing with Fishes, he's an innovator, you know, and there's a ton
for
of
sure.
them in the cannabis community. Of just great minds that are literally being inventors in an industry that's blowing up. So I think some of the best agricultural research is going to come through and out of the cannabis community in this generation. I mean, even just the species and variety trials and research that's been done over the last 10 years in the cannabis community is greater than I think any botany work ever. So
yeah,
it's cool.
I love to be part of it, man. Just talking to people. That's what I do on a couple different shows. And the cannabis industry is just one of my favorite subjects to cover. It's one of my favorite subjects to talk about at the dinner table. So I love it, man. And I love what you're doing. Anyone who's interested in your work can find you at Soil Steward on Instagram. You've got a YouTube channel, Chris Trump. You've mentioned that one before. You do a lot of different work with videos from your farm in Hawaii. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Where else can people find you, Chris, who are interested?
Yeah. We're trying to create resource at naturalfarming.co. I'm not your, you know, web designer, but I have some friends that are helping with that. And so a ton of resources are being made available there. There's a lot of free PDF downloads if you're just into creating some of this stuff in the natural farming nutrient suite. There's some downloads. You just punch in your name and email and it'll shoot you kind of a checklist of things to gather together just so you're not running around looking for things. And then I'm creating online classes because I've found that it's kind of hard for people to travel. But you can come out. I teach at least one class a year. This year in August, I'll teach in Boise, Idaho, a 5-day intensive class, and you can find that at the website. And and I'm excited. This week we'll reach 10,000 YouTube subscribers, so I'm going to release a video I've never released before of just a tour of our farm and kind of how we do things on a 700-acre scale with natural farming.
Awesome. That's really cool. I'm sure that my listeners will be interested in that. Check that out, everybody. Follow us on Instagram at Growcast. Follow me on Instagram at Jordan River IG. And I just want to thank you all for listening. Always appreciate it. Always appreciate you guys sharing the show. This is Chris Trump and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter.